turn your lamp down low. Woo! Turn it down. Please turn your lamp down low. Come on, baby. Girl, I'm in love with you so. Now, I know I've been away for such a long time. But now, baby, I can't get you off of my mind, so come on.
Joshy did last Thursday. Hawaiian Air's currently bankrupt, and trustee Josh Gottbaum has already frozen the pilot's pension fund while he considers eliminating it completely, converting it to a plan that provides fewer benefits, or closing off the pension to new employees. This has upset many airline workers, and Captain Kobayashi felt Gottbaum's presence on the Honolulu to San Francisco flight would be so distracting that he'd be unable to fly safely. FAA rules give captains the right to ask passengers to get off if they feel they risk the safety of the flight.
Rather than cross the Boston Police Patrolman's picket line on Monday, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry chose to cancel a speech he was going to give at the National Conference of Mayors. This is a political victory for union members who've been picketing Boston Mayor Thomas Menino everywhere he goes. It's now been 2 years since the police have had a contract, and the main sticking point is wage increases. In appreciation of Kerry's solidarity, a police spokesperson announced the union would not picket Kerry during the upcoming Democratic National Convention in July.
On the layoff watch, MCI announced it'll cut 2,000 more employees. This comes on top of more than 14,000 layoffs in the last 12 months. MCI blames the new Do Not Call telemarketing legislation for the cuts, which will affect operations in four states and the Washington, D.C. area. Many of those let go found out in a 60-second conference call Thursday where they got a whole day's notice of their termination from an executive who read a statement and then ended the call.
More than 9,000 timber workers in Indonesia started a hunger strike last week outside their local governor's office. The workers are demanding payment of their April and May salaries from two Hong Kong-based plywood companies. One operations manager and his assistant are being held hostage by the employees, who say they'll not be released until all workers receive their full back wages, which for even the highest paid timber worker averages out to just $116 per month.
Here's today's Daubab Report. Recent high school graduates will make less money than those who finished high school more than 20 years ago. The Economic Policy Institute analyzed wages for high school graduates in 1979 and 2003, adjusted for inflation. It found grads in 2003 made between 5 and 17% less than the class of 1979. Back then, nearly two-thirds of jobs open to high school grads also included pension and health benefits. Today, less than a third do.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
If anyone sees John Kerry, tell him now would not be too soon for him to start standing up like a Democrat. Apparently, he's following his consultant's advice of simply hoping Bush will lose the election rather than trying to win it. These are the same geniuses who advised Al Gore. As a result, Kerry is failing to ignite a massive populist fervor that's readily available to him if he'd only offer a flicker of Democratic spark. Example, why isn't he pounding Bush for the gutting of America's middle class? Take jobs. Bush and the media are gaily hailing the creation of some 600,000 new jobs in the last 2 months, claiming this vindicates Georgia's tax cuts for the rich. Kerry has dully played Bush's game, dourly responding that, well, there are still too many Americans without jobs. But this misses the crucial point, which nearly every working stiff knows personally. The issue is not jobs, it's wages. Indeed, lots of them have two or three jobs, and their paychecks still don't make ends meet. What's steaming folks today is that there are no middle-class jobs for them or their children. Yet, Kerry's consultants caution that he can appear to be some sort of economic radical. Radical? I'm talking about jobs paying enough to buy a modest house, send the kids to college, provide the family health coverage, and afford a secure retirement. That's not radical. It's Roosevelt. Bush is actively trying to return America to a pre-Roosevelt robber baron era, dismantling the legal framework that offers a middle class possibility for working families. This is the greatest issue of our time and a stunning political opportunity. But if Kerry won't stand up proudly and loudly now for these families, they're not going to stand up for him in November. This is Jim Hightower saying, Arianna Huffington has an online petition you can sign calling on Kerry to get going and to stand forthrightly as a Democrat. To send Kerry a message, go to fanaticsandfools.org/petition.
You think I'd maybe hide some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
When I get one of my headaches, every minute of that pounding, throbbing pain is a minute too long. So when I take something, I want to make sure I choose the one that will get rid of that tough pain faster.
The moment of choice. Tylenol or Advil for faster headache relief. Truth is, Advil Liquid Gels rush relief to your headache faster than Tylenol. And Advil relief is stronger, better relief too.
Headache's gone already. Glad I chose Advil.
For faster headache relief, advance to Advil Relief.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and perhaps even planet to planet. Who knows, from that Sirius satellite in outer space, you know, if they actually have three satellites up there, and, you know, in orbit that go all over North and South America. Maybe one of them just kind of shoots past the planet, and people on the planet Theta are listening. Welcome to our program. As interesting things coming out of the Supreme Court. We're going to get to that. We've got just a bunch of fascinating stuff today. But first, this, inspired by the Iraqi handover, this just in, George Bush holds U.S. elections 4 months early. Elements of surprise cited as Bush romps to victory. That being the headline. Here's the story. Inspired by the early handover of sovereignty in Iraq, President George W. Bush employed the element of surprise once more last night, holding the U.S. presidential election 4 months early. The election, which only top Bush administration officials were notified about, went exceedingly well for the president, who carried all 50 states and garnered approximately 100% of the vote. Mr. Bush's victory speech, which had originally been scheduled for 11 p.m. last night, was at the last minute rescheduled to 9 p.m., once again capitalizing on the element of surprise. In his speech, Mr. Bush admitted that he might have had a more difficult time getting reelected if the American people had actually been notified about the time and date of the voting, but added, hey, a win's a win, right? Mr. Bush's second inauguration is slated to take place on January 20th, 2005, but administration officials announced or acknowledged that it could happen at any time. For all I know, it already has happened, one aide said. While the stealth presidential election seems to have cemented the Bush administration's reputation for secrecy, one aide said that some secrets were harder to keep than others. For example, one aide said, everyone knows how Paul Wolfowitz gets his hair to look so great. End quote. Those of you who've seen Michael Moore's movie get the joke there. White House officials praised the performance of the controversial new Diebold electronic voting machines, which successfully tabulated final results from Florida before a single vote was cast. Our breaking news story for the day, that from Andy Borowitz, Borowitz Report, B-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z, BorowitzReport.com. And now to a little more serious matters. As I mentioned in the third hour of our program yesterday, I think it's worth just quickly repeating because it leads into a number of things that have to do with what's coming out of the Supreme Court right now. And I think this is, this is pretty important stuff. I mean, you know, first of all, in the spring of 1941, you know, step into the Wayback Machine, and this is you know, the United States is not involved in the war. Oh, maybe we were. Anyway, the spring of 1941, Adolf Hitler issued a famous edict. It was called the Commissar Order. And for the first time, he told his people in the field that he and they were not covered by the Geneva Convention because they were going to be attacking Russia. He wrote a letter to his head guy saying, "The war against Russia will be such that it cannot be conducted in a knightly fashion. This struggle is one of ideologies and racial differences and will have to be conducted with unprecedented, unmerciful, and unrelenting harshness. All officers will have to rid themselves of obsolete ideologies. German soldiers guilty of breaking international law will be excused. Russia has not participated in the Hague Convention and therefore has no rights under it." This is the failed state argument. Russia didn't sign the agreement, so we don't have to hold ourselves to it, even though Germany had signed the agreement. On May 13th, about 2 months later, Field Marshal Wilhelm Keitel, who was the head of the Armed Forces High Command, the equivalent of our Allied Supreme Commander, I guess, issued an order in Hitler's name, saying, "With regard to offenses committed against enemy civilians by members of the Wehrmacht," which was just the normal German army, "prosecution is not obligatory, even where the deed is at the same time a military crime or offense." He said, "Remember in each case all the harm done to Germany since 1918 by the Bolsheviki." And all of this came out of this belief that was put forward by a lawyer, one of the top lawyers in the Third Reich.
As long as I'm the dictator.
Yeah, if this were a dictator. Anyhow, he wrote a memo in which he called the war against terrorism, interestingly using the exact same language Hitler had used, a new kind of war which, quote, renders obsolete and quaint some of the provisions of the Geneva Convention on the Treatment of Prisoners of War. And, this long memo about how the president himself can avoid being prosecuted as a war criminal for allowing war crimes to act because Afghanistan under the Taliban, so this was after the invasion of Afghanistan, before we went into Iraq, Afghanistan under the Taliban was a failed state, to quote Gonzalez. And he says, "Therefore, neither the Federal War Crimes Act nor the Geneva Conventions would apply to the detention conditions at Guantanamo Bay." On January 11th, 2002, State Department legal advisor William H. Taft IV went ballistic. He said, "No, sorry, you guys are overreaching." On January 22nd, a week later, Gonzalez writes, "Neither the Federal War Crimes Act nor the Geneva Conventions would apply to the detention conditions of al-Qaeda prisoners. The president has the plenary constitutional power to suspend our treaty obligations toward Afghanistan, either on the grounds that it was a failed state or by determining that members of the Taliban militia failed to qualify as prisoners of war under terms of the Geneva Treaty." Colin Powell hit the roof. And so 3 days later, in response to Powell being so upset about this, Gonzalez wrote another memo to the president in which he wrote, "As you have said, the war against terrorism is a new kind of war. It is not the traditional clash between nations adhering to the laws of war that form the backdrop for GPW. The nature of the new war places a high premium on other factors, blah, blah, blah. In my judgment, this new paradigm renders obsolete the Geneva Convention's strict limitation on questioning of enemy prisoners and renders quaint some of its provisions." He went on to say, "It substantially reduces the threat of domestic criminal prosecution under the War Crimes Act for the president." January, Powell sees this, he hits the roof again. So 4 days later, Gonzalez again sends in a memo off in response to Powell. He sends it, and Powell's memo said this is going to reverse over a century U.S. policy and practice in supporting the Geneva Conventions and undermine the protection of the law of war for our troops, both in this specific conflict and in general. That was Powell's position. And I believed he was right. So a week later, John Ashcroft gets into the act. He writes a letter saying that George W. can do anything he wants to the Taliban detainees from Afghanistan because it was a failed state. He said, quote, if a determination is made that Afghanistan was a failed state, various legal risks of liability, litigation, and criminal prosecution are minimized. A presidential determination against treaty applicability would provide the highest assurance that no court would subsequently entertain charges that American military officers, intelligence officials, or law enforcement officers violated Geneva Convention rules relating to field conduct, detention conduct, or interrogation of detainees. And so thus, on February 7, 2002, George Bush himself, agreeing with John Ashcroft, put his signature to a directive that declared, quote, the war against terrorism ushers in a new paradigm. Groups with broad international reach commit horrific acts against innocent civilians. This new paradigm requires new thinking on the law of war. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. And it goes on to say, none of the provisions of Geneva apply to our conflict with al-Qaeda. And the Taliban detainees do not qualify as prisoners of war, but are unlawful combatants. Okay, so the Supreme Court, this makes its way to the Supreme Court. And as you probably noticed yesterday in the news, the Supreme Court said, no, don't think so, George. Even though, no matter what, we're just not going to suspend the Constitution. I'm sorry. I got to find out who that one was. What do you want to bet it was Thomas? Anyhow, Senator J. Day O'Connor said the court, quote, has made clear that the state of war is not a blank check for the president when it comes to the rights of the nation's citizens. Four of the justices, Souter, Ginsburg, Scalia, and Stevens, said that they would go farther and order Hamdi's immediate release. And Justice Souter, in particular, said that holding him incommunicado is a clear violation of the Geneva Conventions. And this is just bang. 14 of the Guantanamo folks sued out of the 600 down there. In another case, this was a 6-3 vote by the Supreme Court. They said that anyone behind bars under the control of the United States has the right to a court. Just that simple. Sorry, you can't rely on that executive order that Adolf Hitler issued in the spring of 1941. Excuse me, that George Bush signed in February of 2002. Well, they say the same thing, of course, essentially. And the Supreme Court said, we're not going to go along with this. We're just not going to. God bless him. I am impressed. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Big things happening in the United States of America. The Supreme Court says to George W., sorry, no matter how much you want to be dictator, no matter how much fun you think it might be, it ain't going to happen.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
No, says Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. She says it is during our most challenging and uncertain moments that our nation's commitment to due process is most severely tested, and it is in those doing it because we have been the most powerful military force on earth. They've been doing it because we were the most powerful moral force that they could find. And as we lose that now, I mean, this is you know, this woman who interviewed George Bush in Ireland day before yesterday, 3 days ago, and so infuriated him that Laura wouldn't give her an interview, said, you know, the people of Ireland are not happy you're here. How are you going to deal with that? What are you going to do? And, you know, he goes, well, they don't understand America. I think they do. And I think they understand that George Bush's vision of America is inconsistent with that of the founders, with that of 228 years of American history, with the exception of the last 3 years, and certainly inconsistent with the view of democracy that the rest of the world has not only held, but people have been willing to have revolutions over, die for. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, and let's see. This is Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Hey, listen, I think it's very important when we draw comparisons between some of the edicts that have been issued by Bush versus those issued by Adolf Hitler, that we recognize that Hitler, at least during World War One, served out his time in the military.
And was wounded and ended up in a hospital, and yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what do you think? I mean,
wait a minute. Chuck, are you saying that Adolf Hitler was more of a war hero than George W. Bush?
It sounds like it to me.
Can
I tell you? I mean, I don't like Hitler. I think he's a criminal. But, you know, if we're going to sit there and compare edicts made and what have you, I think that what a lot of people in America.
Women. Lots of interesting things to get into here as the day goes on. This Friday will be the 50th anniversary, I believe. Yeah, the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, which made it illegal to discriminate against women. I remember when I was a kid, you could look in the newspaper and see ads that said man wanted, woman wanted, right? I mean, they had these categories in the Help Wanted ads. No longer. Yeah, there's a reason for that. Anyhow, we'll get into that in just a minute. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, exposing the con in conservative. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning...
Currently bankrupt and trustee Josh Gottbaum has already frozen the pilot's pension fund while he considers eliminating it completely, converting it to a plan that provides fewer benefits, or closing off the pension to new employees. This has upset many airline workers, and Captain Kobayashi felt Gottbaum's presence on the Honolulu to San Francisco flight would be so distracting that he'd be unable to fly safely. FAA rules give captains the right to ask passengers to get off if they feel they risk the safety of the flight.
Rather than cross the Boston Police Patrolman's picket line on Monday, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry chose to cancel a speech he was going to give at the National Conference of Mayors. This is a political victory for union members who've been picketing Boston Mayor Thomas Menino everywhere he goes. It's now been 2 years since the police have had a contract, and the main sticking point is wage increases. In appreciation of Kerry's solidarity, a police spokesperson announced the union and May salaries from two Hong Kong-based plywood companies. One operations manager and his assistant are being held hostage by the employees, who say they'll not be released until all workers receive their full back wages, which for even the highest-paid timber worker averages out to just $116 per month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Recent high school graduates will make less money than those who finished high school more than 20 years ago. The Economic Policy Institute analyzed wages for high school graduates in 1979 and 2003, adjusted for inflation. It found grads in 2003 made between 5 and 17% less than the class of 1979. Back then, nearly two-thirds of jobs open to high school grads also included pension and health benefits. Today, less than a third do.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 26 minutes past the before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, live broadcasting coast to coast, border to border. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Laura Flanders has a new book out. For the last 25 years or so, I've done volunteer work with an international relief organization based in Germany called Kinder- und Jugendhilfswerksalam. And in fact, we lived over there in 86 and 87 for a year. And back about 10, 12 years ago, thereabouts, I was down in Bogota, Colombia. We had put together a program in the La Paz slum of Bogota for the kids there. And the Catholic Church, which owns the Archbishop of Bogota, I think is his title. I'm not Catholic, so I'm not familiar with it, but my recollection is his title is the Archbishop of Bogota. His office owns the main television station, the main radio station in Bogota, and has tremendous influence over the newspapers. For example, in that city, it is not illegal to buy birth control devices, but you can't find a pharmacy that sells them because no pharmacist wants to burn in hell for eternity for doing this and the pressure of the church. Anyhow, they had offered to give us a 700-acre, an old monastery down in the Medellin Valley where the drug wars were going on. We took a couple days. We traveled down there. We discovered that what had happened was the rebels had come in and they'd slaughtered a bunch of nuns and priests there. And it was right in the middle of this firefight zone. And so we went back to Bogota, and I was with this woman who had been on the ground there, and she was basically running the program, the program in the slum. And we went to see the Archbishop to basically thank him and say no, thank you. And we had to wait 2 hours to meet him, and then we were ushered into this giant room. He was sitting on a throne. The room must have been 70 feet long with 30-foot ceilings and just, kind of his throne on this one end. And he was, right off the bat, I guess I offended him because I didn't kiss his ring, but I tried to shake his hand. Kathleen had to stand behind me. We were told that she should stand behind me and she shouldn't speak. And so anyhow, we're having this conversation, and I was, saying thank you very much, but we're going to respectfully decline, the offer of this property, but we could use some help with this other thing that we're doing, and blah de blah. And he was pointing his finger in my face with the other and shouting, "Women are the cause of all this. They know when they're fertile and when they're not. This all goes back to Eve. If she hadn't eaten the apple, women are the cause of all the problems that we're." And he's doing this rant about original sin, right? And we're like trying, backing out of there. And I'm thinking, this is a guy who has just incredible power in Bogota, and Kathleen, you really kind of blew it here, and we just basically got out of there and took off, nothing ever came of that other than that the church no longer helped us. They hadn't done much at that point in any case, and we weren't a Catholic organization or anything. But isn't that really the mentality that is now being revisited by the Bush administration, that is talked about now in books like The Da Vinci Code and things, that historically the key to holding together patriarchy is the oppression of women, and the key to oppressing women is using religious or cultural quote history end quote to blame them for the problems of humankind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes within a bigger context. The religious crusade is one piece of it, but I think that we've also seen on the political, more kind of secular realm, the same attitude that, an individual is to blame for his or her fate or to thank for, to, gets the credit for his or her advancement, that individual alone. We see a sort of effort to privatize problems and de-socialize, if you will, strip the society of its responsibility to raise all boats, care about the most vulnerable. So we definitely have in welfare policy a kind of punitive approach. If the United States were to ratify the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, which it has yet to do, it'd have to take a stand on the fact that women who make T-shirts are routinely paid less per hour than, men who make cars. What's the distinction? What would happen to our economy and the profits of our very, very rich if we really saw women treated equally in the workplace and if women had equal standing in our political and as well as our home world? This is, a big picture, and what we talk about in this book is how women's issues, as we tend to frame them, is really an inadequate way to look at the way that gender bias affects our world.
Yeah.
You see it certainly in the area of reproductive rights, but you see it everywhere.
Now, you know, when George W. ran for office in 2000, he had this slogan, W is for women, quite like that. I mean, there's this active, aggressive attempt on the part of the Bush administration to portray itself as woman-friendly. What in your mind, and or in this book, we're talking with Laura Flanders, The W Effect, Bush's War on Women. What is inconsistent about that? Where does that break down?
Well, where it isn't inconsistent is it's all part of an effort to sell the American public on policies that the majority of American people deplore. I mean, look at the polls. Most people do not believe in banning abortion, passing a constitutional amendment to discriminate against gays and lesbians, do not believe in denying adolescents the information they need to have sex and still be safe, do not believe in penalizing unmarried women who need help from the state in terms of welfare, and yet these are all programs that this administration has tried to implement, and to one extent or another is succeeding. So I think the stands for women in a circle are the ones who are out there now trying to sell that to Americans, particularly that very critical sector of swing voters. And remember that the undecideds, the persuadables out there, insofar as there are very many of them, are overwhelmingly women voters. And these are the grounds on which the fight for their vote will be fought. And it all depends on the extent to which people get the information versus the extent to which people like Laura Bush are able to kind of put a female-friendly face on what has really been a reactionary set of policies. And that's where, you know, programs like yours and mine and books like these come in, trying to, you know, present the facts so that we don't live in some kind of Stepford world.
Yeah, in fact, you make that analogy in here. I thought it was remarkable. We're speaking with Laura Flanders, a widely published journalist and author of Bush Women, Tales of a Cynical Species and Real Majority, Media Minority, The Cost of Stealing Women and Reporting, as well as the founder of the Women's Desk at FAIR. She hosts Your Call, a live show on public radio, and you're also on air.
Would hold press conferences on the other side of the hall in the press club from the National Organization for Women, the Feminist Majority, you know, vast national membership associations representing tens of thousands of women would be holding their press conferences in support of Anita Hill on one side, and on the other side there would be Laura Ingraham and two other people supporting Clarence Thomas. Well, they discovered that reporters were sent out to cover this debate and were told to bring in, you know, bring balance to their reports.
Both sides of the story, yes.
They would take quotes from one side and then take quotes from the other as if they were, you know, comparable and equal. That was the seed, I think, of an idea on the right that what there needed to be was a right-wing anti-feminist women's outfit that could provide a counter-voice to groups like NOW and the Feminist Majority and the Organized Women's Movement. So that's what the Independent Women's Forum is, and it became as successful as it is thanks to the fact that, unlike those other foundations that have to provide, you know, those other groups that have to get money, they supported the men against sexual integration at the Citadel. They backed Paula Jones, of course.
Wait, I mean, you know, this all seems
Bill Clinton.
Wait a second, Laura.
Long track record, and now they're in office.
Laura, this is. I mean, you know, they argued against the violence against women.
You betcha, and they argued against the United States sending a delegation to the Women's Convention in Beijing in '95.
How? I mean, what possible reason could these people have for doing this?
Well, it's part of a long effort to cast the women's movement as the enemy of women everywhere. It's the women's movement that mean that women are overburdened in the home. It's the women's movement that mean that executive women are working such long hours. It's the women's movement that has led women to feel unsatisfied with their domestic lives. You name it, it's our fault. And instead of having, you know, good old boys to make the case, they've figured out that it makes more sense to have women make the arguments, and so that's who we've got. Now, this time, those very same people are actually in office, heading up, for example, Nancy Pottenhauer, who is the head of the Independent Women's Forum and one of the most vigorous voices against the Violence Against Women Act, is now the head of the Justice Department's Council on Violence Against Women. So you can just imagine where she stands.
Well, what I mean, when they say we're against the Violence Against Women Act, what What rationalization? I mean, what?
Well, it's nothing to do with women. It's to do with congressional overreach and state rights, states' rights. So they're putting a sort of anti-feminist spin on what's really an old conservative agenda to roll back federal civil rights mandates in the guise of claiming they're unconstitutional, that they're an unconstitutional seizure of state power by D.C. So that was their argument, and they won in the Supreme Court in one of those narrow 5-4 decisions. Most of the most valuable components of the Violence Against Women Act having to do with compensation that women victims could sue for were stripped away. But it was a long effort, and the Independent Women's Forum was at the front of it.
Yeah, on the back of the book, you rhetorically asked the question, who needs the Christian Coalition when you have the White House? We have about a minute left before a break here. Who does need the Christian? What's that about?
Well, you hardly need them is the point. I mean, you've got religious right activists in public jobs advancing their agenda as national public policy. So no longer is the Christian right a lobby group in the grassroots. It's got its homes right in the West Wing.
Okay. Okay, great. And in fact, I think it was Randall Terry said, I can retire now because George W. is now the head of the Christian, the movement in the United States. Laura Flanders, is there a website where people can find more information about this?
Come to my website, lauraflanders.com. And if you want to find out more about this book, All Bush Women, you'll find all the information there.
Great. Laura Flanders, LauraFlanders.com. Laura, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
We
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. An HIV outbreak in California's adult film industry left five porn performers infected with the virus. The HIV scare captured worldwide media attention and raised questions about the porn industry's ability to continue policing itself. Meanwhile, porn performers want to launch the industry's first union. Nac Nguyen reports from Los Angeles.
20-year-old Zakara will perform in her first adult film this week. Her entry into the porn industry was easy. She heard about an agency from a friend, made an appointment, walked in, and was signed. The pay was a big motivation in her decision to star in sex films.
I was homeless off and on since November. I'm trying to have a residence of my own, pay for schooling, pay for my wedding in about 9 to 10 months, and just so I can have everything I need and I'm provided for.
Zakara is not put off by the recent HIV scare in the adult film industry. The April outbreak originated from a porn actor returning from a stint in Brazil who then infected several co-stars, spurring a 60-day quarantine and an industry-imposed moratorium on filming. By the end of the quarantine, five porn performers were found to be HIV infected. State lawmakers sprang into action, drafting bills calling for more frequent HIV testing and mandatory condom use. Assemblyman Paul Koretz is the author of one bill.
If we come down too hard on the industry, they just go underground or leave the state, and then we lose our ability to protect the health of the participants.
The state collects about $31 million a year in sales tax from sex films. Although a handful of porn production companies impose condom-only shoots, the majority do not, claiming audiences are turned off by condoms in sex films. And some porn producers say the market craves riskier sex. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Nac Nguyen in Los Angeles.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Oh, the women cross the river work with tools that are ancient and handmade. And they plow their fields in perfect rows, and then they rest beneath the shade.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4.5 minutes before the hour. What has George W. Bush actually done about the situation, the lives of women in the United States? Well, number one, Heather Wokush summarized this really well in an op-ed piece she wrote back in June 25th. George W. Bush closed women's offices. One of Bush's first acts as president was to shut down the White House Office for Women's Initiatives, which had monitored policy initiatives, helped coordinate federal funds, and served as a liaison for outside groups since 1995. Then in late 2001, the only thing that saved 10 regional bureaus, 10 regional offices of the Women's Bureau, which was a division of the, you know, within the Department of Labor, was public outcry. He tried to cut these things, and people stood up and spoke out. That was the only reason he had to stop. And now in his fiscal year 2005 budget, he's proposed cutting the funding for them. So, you know, if you can't kill them off, you just starve them. Yeah, we'll still have them. They just won't have any staff. She goes on to say, fudged the facts about women. Information affecting women in crucial areas ranging from pay equity to breast cancer to HIV has been distorted on governmental websites and publications during Bush's term. Even worse, data has sometimes disappeared altogether. The National Cancer Institute, for example, changed its website to suggest that abortion and breast cancer were linked, even though the studies found that they weren't. That website was only changed back to reflect the scientific truth that there's no connection between abortion and breast cancer after Congress acted. A Republican-controlled Congress at that. The Department of Labor has eliminated essential publications on the rights of women's workers, such as Don't Work in the Dark, Know Your Rights, and Fact Sheets for Women in the Workplace. And the Department of Health and Human Services has altered information on its website. These are just, you know, a few four examples. Dr. David Hager, for example, who as a physician refused to prescribe contraceptives to unmarried women, is one of the three outspoken right-wing religious conservatives Bush named to the Food and Drug Administration's Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health Drugs. These are the folks who are making the decisions about birth control pills. The ones who... George W. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent...
Patrolman's picket line on Monday. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry chose to cancel a speech he was going to give at the National Conference of Mayors. This is a political victory for union members who've been picketing Boston Mayor Thomas Menino everywhere he goes. It's now been 2 years since the police have had a contract, and the main sticking point is wage increases. In appreciation of Kerry's solidarity, a police spokesperson announced the union would not picket Kerry during the upcoming Democratic National Convention in July.
On the layoff watch, MCI announced it'll cut 2,000 more employees. This comes on top of more than 14,000 layoffs in the last 12 months. MCI blames the new do-not-call telemarketing legislation for the cuts, which will affect operations in four states and the Washington, D.C. area. Many of those let go found out in a 60-second conference call Thursday where they got a whole day's notice of their termination from an executive who read a statement and then ended the call.
More than 9,000 timber workers in Indonesia started a hunger strike last week outside their local governor's office. The workers are demanding payment of their April and May salaries from two Hong Kong-based plywood companies. One operations manager and his assistant are being held hostage by the employees, who say they'll not be released until all workers receive their full back wages, which for even the highest paid timber worker averages out to just $116 per month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Recent high school graduates will make less money than those who finished high school more than 20 years ago. The Economic Policy Institute analyzed wages for high school graduates in 1979 and 2003, adjusted for inflation. It found grads in 2003 made between 5 and 17% less than the class of 1979. Back then, nearly two-thirds of jobs open to high school grads also included pension and health benefits. Today, less than a third do.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Well, well, the hammer is getting nailed. The Hammer is Tom DeLay's nickname. He's the Republican House Majority Leader who's notorious for hammering corporate lobbyists, demanding that they give millions of dollars in campaign funds for him and other Republicans. DeLay, the most powerful man in Congress, controls the flow of legislation, and he's not subtle about telling lobbyists that they must pay if they want their bills to move. Now, Representative Chris Bell has nailed the hammer with an extensive ethics complaint. The Houston Democrat accuses DeLay of bribery, extortion, fraud, money laundering, and the abuse of power. He cites the case of Westar Energy Corporation, which in 2002 wanted a self-serving provision written into an energy bill. In an internal corporate email, a Westar executive wrote that, quote, "To get a seat at the table, the company must donate $25,000 in soft money to DeLay." The executive bluntly said, "His agreement is necessary before the House conferees can push the language we have in place in the House bill." Sure enough, Westar's special break was put in the bill once the money was delivered. In typical style, DeLay has launched a venal counterattack, calling his accuser a bitter partisan. He even trotted out House Speaker Dennis Hastert to declare that the very filing of the charges against DeLay denigrates what ethics is all about. Huh? Ethics is about not being corrupt. For example, not using the power of your public office to do favors in exchange for cash. It's DeLay's corruption that's denigrating, not the fact that Chris Bell has the temerity to call him on it. Also, one of DeLay's top lieutenants has threatened that Republicans are going to have to respond in kind, declaring that he would retaliate by filing ethics charges against unnamed Democratic leaders. "You kill my dog," he wailed, "I'll kill your cat." This is Jim Hightower saying, at least he's admitting that DeLay is a dog.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
When I get one of my headaches, every minute of that pounding, throbbing pain is a minute too long. So when I take something, I want to make sure I choose the one that will get rid of that tough pain faster.
The moment of choice. Tylenol or Advil for faster headache relief. Truth is, Advil liquid gels rush relief to your headache faster than Tylenol. And Advil relief is stronger, better relief too.
Headache's gone already. Glad I chose Advil.
For faster headache relief, advance to Advil.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, in Canada, it looks like the Liberal Party has beaten back a challenge from the Conservative Party to control that country. The Cons, of course, campaigning on a platform of let's privatize Canada's national health care system and make it like the United States. And you got to, you know, all over Canada, people have just got to be shaking their heads going, they said, what? And on and on it goes, right? Let's do away with the social safety net. Let's forget about the idea of a social contract. Let's cut taxes, raise debt. And people didn't buy it. Although, you know, Canada, again, has a system, unlike the United States, a parliamentary system where there are multiple parties. And the Liberals are going to have to rule. They're not over 50%, and so they're going to have to rule by forming coalitions with other groups, like the I believe it's called the New Democrats. There's another group that is even farther, you know, more left. And this is fascinating. Speaking of countries that have proportional representation, that are, you know, more democratic than the United States with regard to this sort of thing, we have a Berlusconi alert for the day. Yeah, that's the Italian national anthem there, for those of you who don't know. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's Forza Party, Forza Italia, party lost control of its Milan power base in local elections. Interesting. Things are slipping. The reason why we even talk about Silvio Berlusconi is because I think he's an instructive and perhaps cautionary tale for us. Here's a guy who went from being a small-time crook and to being a small-time businessman, although he's been now, his former business buddy just got thrown in jail for bribery, and they've got charges pending against him, but they can't bring them until he's no longer in office. And he bought some radio stations, and he bought some TV stations, and then he bought some more, and he ended up owning, literally, this is no exaggeration, Silvio Berlusconi, who is now the richest man in Italy, billionaire, the richest single person in Italy, owns 90% of the radio, television, and print media that Italians are exposed to. About all that he has been unable to buy has been the Italian equivalent of national public radio and public television. And yet, it's still, and once he had all that control of all that media, this, I don't know, about 7, 8, 9 years ago, he ran for office. Well, actually, you know, as prime minister, you don't run for office, you run your party. And you get as many seats in parliament, you get enough seats in parliament that your party can then say, okay, this is our guy. And that's what he did with the Forza Italia party. And what has happened, what has been happening is that Berlusconi is right, you know, not only, I mean, you know, his defense of Mussolini kind of offended a few people. His outright embrace of corporatism, of bringing corporations into government, has put a lot of people off. His rolling back much of the social safety net in Italy has got a lot of people upset. And what's happening is people are starting to see the man behind the curtain. And this is just another demonstration to me that, you know, Thomas Jefferson's note that, you know, if people are well informed, then democracy will survive. And here we have the left-wing challenger. This is in the city of Milan. Filippo Pannati beat out the incumbent Milan governor, Umberto Colli, garnering 54.2% of the vote to her 45.8%. The opposition party, the Democrats of the left, gave the center-left 54% to 46% of the right. The big city results are still coming in as of this reporting. Oddly, Berlusconi even owns the football team in Milan, but he lost in Milan. He's in Turkey right now, of course, for the NATO summit, and he says, I don't see any reason why my government should not remain in place. We have a 5-year mandate, and we intend to stay true to our program. We'll see. So anyway, I just found that fascinating, and that is our Berlusconi alert for the day. He's slipping there in Italy, and so, you know, interesting stuff. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I've got a letter I have to share with you. Just an absolutely amazing letter that dovetails perfectly with another Supreme Court decision that just came down this morning. And I'll tell you about that. First, let's go to the phones and see what's up here. We've got 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free number. Jim in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Oh, Mr. Hartman, thank you. You know, we do pretty good here in Santa Fe with grassroots at the local level.
Yeah.
But I think we need to do more than that. I think we need some national grassroots work. And I just was wondering if I could get your opinion on what you think might be the best way to network people and get them all together. Because, like I said, you know, it's one thing when you're doing a thing for mayor, thing for, you know, the local city council, but how do you pull grassroots together for the nation.
Well, there's two probably three ways to do it. One is to use an existing party like the Green Party or the Democratic Party, and you know they've got mailing lists and they've got databases and you participate with them and co-sponsor things with them or whatever. For example, last weekend I went to a gig for John Kerry at the home of somebody here in Vermont, and Senator Leahy showed up Bernie Sanders showed up, and there was a couple hundred people there. I mean, it was huge. It was in a big house, and it was fascinating. It was just something that a private individual pulled together, and then there was somebody else there who was pulling together another one for, you know, down in southern Vermont. So that number one is to use an existing party and participate with them. Number two would be to use one of the organizations that are out there, these 527 type groups, MoveOn.org, the meetup bunch. You know, Howard Dean has got his program now. He's trying to create these, you know, use the remnant of the echo of his popularity to create grassroots organizations for people. And I'm not sure what his website is. You know, it used to be deanforpresident.com. Probably still is, and that'll point you to, you know, whatever it would be. But in any case, or a quick Google search would find it. But that may be an option, is to use, you know, I mean, MoveOn.org was organizing things for Moore's movie last night. So there's that. And then the third thing is to simply use your own existing networks. Just, you know, invite friends over. Just invite, you know, have if you or somebody in your home likes to cook or you know, go to a restaurant and buy dinner or whatever. But, you know, invite 6, 8, 10 people over, or four, or whatever you're comfortable with, and just say, hey, you know, let's have a dinner and talk about these issues. What can we do? And do a little brainstorming. And I think you'll be amazed what comes out of that.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for your radio program. It's really, really, really educational.
Oh, you're welcome, Jim, and thank you for listening to us there on KTRC in Santa Fe. I appreciate it. 15 minutes past the hour. Here, I got to read you this letter. I'll give you the punchline first. This is a letter that John Ashcroft wrote in 1997, when he was the senator from Missouri. Now, keep in mind, in 2000, he ran against Mel Carnahan, the governor of Missouri. Mel Carnahan died in a plane crash, a mysterious plane crash, very similar to Paul Wellstone, just a week or two before the election. And the voters of Missouri elected the dead guy anyway. And so Ashcroft was out on his butt. I mean, they threw him out of the Senate. The people of Missouri apparently had figured him out. And so George brought him in as Attorney General. But anyhow, it's just here's the letter, 1997. The Internet, I'm quoting from a letter from John Ashcroft. I'm not sure to whom it was written. Actually, it's more of an op-ed piece. It was on his website when he was a senator. The Internet provides a great opportunity to our country. In order to guarantee that the United States meets the challenge of this new means of commerce, communication, and education, government must be careful not to interfere. We should not harness the Internet with a confusing array of intrusive regulations and controls, yet the Clinton administration has tried to do just that. The Clinton administration would like the federal government to have the capability to read any international or domestic computer communications. The FBI wants access to decode, digest, and discuss financial transactions, personal email, and proprietary information sent abroad, all in the name of national security. Ashcroft is like, can you believe this? He goes on to go, this proposed policy raises obvious concerns about Americans' privacy. Big Brother should not be looming over the shoulders of international cyber surfers. He goes on to say, why should we grant our government the Orwellian capability to listen at will? And in real, this administration, the Clinton administration's interest in all email is a wholly unhealthy precedent, especially given this administration's track record on FBI files and IRS snooping. Every medium by which people communicate can be subject to exploitation by these illegal intentions, by those with illegal intentions. This is no reason to hand Big Brother the keys to unlock our email diaries, open our ATM records, read our medical records, or translate our international communications. He wraps it up by saying, talking about how the internet is like the Wild West, you know. And he says, to settle this new frontier, we should unleash American know-how and ingenuity. The government's police state policy on encryption is creating hindrances and hurdles that will eventually injure our ability to compete internationally. Government's role should be to break down barriers to allow everyone to excel to their highest and best. Okay, John Ashcroft, 1997. Now, of course, as you know, once he became Attorney General, he pushed through the Patriot Act. We can listen into all of your emails. We can, I mean, the main evidence against Jose Padilla that they've held him now for 2 years without even being able to see a lawyer is that they knew that he was surfing websites that were showing how to make dirty bombs. Well, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, and I'm not sure if this came down yesterday afternoon or this morning. I think it might have been this morning. The Supreme Court basically upheld a preliminary injunction against the Child Online Protection Act, a 1998 law, basically, by the way, that was designed originally to protect kids, but basically had the effect of allowing the government to intrude on the Internet. This is fascinating. I'll give you the details of this in just a second. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released.
The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, now with new updated...
We're here with you in our chat room, which you can get to at www.tomhartmann.com, and then just click the chat link. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And once you get in there, click the chat button, and boom, you're in. And, you know, if it asks for a screen name and all that, any AOL or CompuServe screen name and password will get you in. And if you don't have one, you can sign up right there for a free one. And no, you don't get on spam lists, and you don't have to pay anything. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything like that. So it's a nice little thing. Anyhow, the Democratic Forum over in CompuServe. In our chat room, Wildcat Forever 2004 said, "So I'd just like to file my opinion that the only reason Ashcroft and Barr would oppose the censorship legislation is because they were proposed by Democrats. The right stand for the wrong reasons." And I would strongly agree with that. It's just absolutely remarkable to me how John Ashcroft can take positions as a civil libertarian when they are written in opposition to Bill Clinton and Clinton's policies. This goes back to when they were trying to pass the laws that had to do with... This goes back to when they were trying to pass the laws that have to do with encryption. Remember the big encryption debate and the Freedom Frontier Foundation, as I recall, got involved with that. And should we be allowed to encrypt the data that we send over the web and those kind of things? And that, of course, is what Ashcroft was writing about. And then also in 98, there was this law passed, the Child Online Protection Act, COPA. Now, COPA is pretty draconian. For example, I have a message board, which you can also find if you go to tomhartmann.com and you link off to it, where people can post messages and do. I mean, there's tens of thousands of messages posted on there. And because of this law, when you sign in, when you log in, you have to give your birthday, or you have to say how old you are. And if you are 13 or under, we don't let you participate in the board. People who are 13 or under are just locked out. Because to allow them in, you'd have to continuously supervise the thing. Because if somebody posted one message that was perceived as harmful to minors, and there was a minor who was a member, then... boom, $50,000 a day fine, 6 months in jail. For me, as the guy who runs the bulletin board. Well, this law, which has COPA law, has caused all sorts of strange things like that to have to happen all around the internet. At the same time, experience tells us it really hasn't protected any kids that I can tell. I don't think that. This is the way to go. And now the Supreme Court has struck it down. A good decision. The People for the American Way Foundation, Ralph Neese, he's the president of it, says this is an important victory for the principle that the First Amendment applies to the Internet. You know that First Amendment? You can say anything you want. He goes on to say the court decided not to endorse a law that would replace judgments of individual parents with a one-size-fits-all standard that squelches First Amendment freedoms. Now, this whole topic really does raise legitimate issues about how do we protect children in a society where there's just, all this stuff available to them. And this is what's being played out with the FCC and obscenity laws and all that sort of thing. The Supreme Court has now taken... What is interestingly, you got Bob Barr on the side of this thing, the old conservative, and many liberals on the side. You know, this is a true liberal conservative position, that free speech is an okay thing in the United States, that we believe in the First Amendment. That's important. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman program, where despair is not an option. Get active! And stick around. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It took a brave pilot to boot the boss of Hawaiian Airlines off his flight, but that's just what Captain Craig Kobayashi did last Thursday. Hawaiian Air is currently bankrupt, and trustee Josh Gottbaum has already frozen the pilot's pension fund while he considers eliminating it completely, converting it to a plan that provides fewer benefits, or closing off the pension to new employees. This has upset many airline workers, and Captain Kobayashi felt Gottbaum's presence on the Honolulu to San Francisco flight would be so distracting that he'd be unable to fly safely. FAA rules give captains the right to ask passengers to get off if they feel they risk the safety of the flight.
Rather than cross the Boston Police Patrolman's picket line on Monday, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry chose to cancel a speech he was going to give at the National Conference of Mayors. This is a political victory for union members who've been picketing Boston Mayor Thomas Menino everywhere he goes. It's now been 2 years since the police have had a contract, and the main sticking point is wage increases. In appreciation of Kerry's solidarity, a police spokesperson announced the union would not picket Kerry during the upcoming Democratic National Convention in July.
On the layoff watch, MCI announced it'll cut 2,000 more employees. This comes on top of more than 14,000 layoffs in the last 12 months. MCI blames the new Do Not Call telemarketing legislation for the cuts, which will affect operations in four states and the Washington, D.C. area. Many of those let go found out in a 60-second conference call Thursday, where they got a whole day's notice of their termination from an executive who read a statement and then ended the call.
More than 9,000 timber workers in Indonesia started a hunger strike last week outside their local governor's office. The workers are demanding payment of their April and May salaries from two Hong Kong-based plywood companies. One operations manager and his assistant are being held hostage by the employees, who say they'll not be released until all workers receive their full back wages, which for even the highest paid timber worker averages out to just $116 per month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Recent high school graduates will make less money than those who finished high school more than 20 years ago. The Economic Policy Institute analyzed wages for high school graduates in 1979 and 2003, adjusted for inflation. It found grads in 2003 made between 5 and 17% less than the class of 1979. Back then, nearly two-thirds of jobs open to high school grads also included pension and health benefits. Today, less than a third do.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Pancho was a bandit boy. His horse was fast as polished steel. He wore his gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel.
This is starting to sound like George W. on the aircraft carrier. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 138,000 American troops are still in Iraq, as well as 20,000 troops from other countries. about 12,000 of them from England, as I recall, plus a private army of over 20,000 people. Now, there are more mercenaries in Iraq, armed private contractors providing security services. I mean, we used to call these mercenaries. I don't know why nobody's using the word anymore. There are more of them in Iraq than there are of all of the coalition of the, you know, the bribed or the harassed or the whatever. We're giving Iraq back to the Iraqis is the official word. And yet we're constructing 14 permanent bases. My take on this is that, and we're going to get to the oil in just a second, that the Iraqis see through this, that George W. didn't really, I mean, you know, everybody knew, as Wolfie told, I believe it was Wolfowitz, told Vanity Fair way back when, oh, weapons of mass destruction was just a bureaucratic reason that we thought the public would buy. That there were other reasons that we went into Iraq, oil being right at the core of them. And it wasn't quite so simple as saying, we want your oil so we can continue to drive Hummers. That was no doubt a piece of it. But I think it was a larger, we want to have a significant, enduring, powerful, lasting, unshakable, unmovable presence in this part of the world, because this part of the world controls roughly a third of the planet's oil. So it wasn't just about Iraq. It was about, you know, really about the whole Middle East. And now Paul Bremer, I found this interesting. You know, he handed over sovereignty, supposedly, to the Iraqis. And yet at the same time, I mean, the day before, he signed an order saying that he and all of his coalition provisional authority guys and the U.S. military have complete immunity from Iraqi law and Iraqi courts. Now, you know, when the British is limited to advice and consultation. Now, you know, we're all hoping that they can pull this thing off. Prime Minister Iyad Alawi and all these guys. But, you know, there's some problems here. Two-thirds of this bunch carry foreign passports. The remaining third who have Iraqi passports are mostly the women in the group. Bremer also signed an edict that gives U.S. contractors complete immunity from Iraqi law. He created and appointed an electoral commission. This is the bunch that says, okay, this is who can run, which has the power to ban certain political parties of their choice. He created the office. Now, this is all, he did all this stuff, and then he said, okay, here's your government, but by the way, you've got to take these people I'm giving you and these offices. He created an office of national security advisor and an office of national intelligence chief, and he appointed who he wanted to those two offices for 5-year periods. And the handoff document says that the new government and even an elected government after that, assuming the elections are held in January or February or whenever, doesn't have the power to kick these guys out. The Bremer put in. He appointed inspectors general, which basically American and British. many of the people who are running this government, when they came back to Iraq to participate, didn't even bring their families with them. You know, are the Iraqis going to look at these people, these men by and large, the ones carrying the foreign passports, who had formerly lived in the United States and Britain, who kind of sat out the Saddam years, are the Iraqi people going to look at them and say, well, okay, we'll give them a chance, or are the Iraqi people going to say, hey, these people aren't our people? It looks so far, and this is actually, regardless of its impact on the 2004 election, I really want the bloodshed to stop. And I think all of us do. You know, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Progressives, whatever, Libertarian, I think everybody wants the bloodshed to stop. On all sides. And, you know, I think that there's a possibility. And we need to be doing more to bring that about. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. Now, here's a very interesting little factoid. Andrew, which is sort of isn't it interesting? You know, it's a phenomenon. But, you know, when Bill Clinton became president, that, you know, now he's got an enemy. Ah.
Well, it was the complete rise of Sean Hannity, for God's sake. I mean, there wouldn't have been a Sean Hannity without Clinton.
Yeah,
anyway, just wanted to talk to you. Thanks,
okay,
man.
Thanks, Chris. And I think, you know, oddly, the presence of George W. Bush has, in many ways, fueled the rise of left-wing talk radio. You know, whether it's Air America or this program or others, people are saying, wait a minute, or at least half the people are saying, you know, this isn't the government that we wanted. Okay, here's where it gets interesting. This is an article in the current issue of the International edition of Newsweek. And it'll be interesting to see if it actually shows up in the domestic edition as well. The headline is The Virgin Oil Fields of Iraq. The subtitle, A large part of the country is still mainly unexplored. Of the more than 80 oil fields discovered, only 21 have been developed. This is an article by Leonardo Mogheri for Newsweek. It's in the July 5th issue. When it comes to oil, Iraq is, believe it or not, largely virgin territory, he writes in the article. Iraq is the only Middle Eastern oil power, other than Saudi Arabia, with huge reserves that are untapped, even unexplored. Indeed, Iraq has the potential to match the 10.5 million barrel a day capacity of Saudi Arabia, which is now the only producer capable of using its excess capacity to moderate world oil prices. And then they talk about how this came to be. You know, that the British originally went in there in the 20s because they saw that the next wars were going to be about oil, just like the earlier wars had been about coal. And then the Wall Street crash of 1929 led to a decline in demand for oil around the world. And so the Seven Sisters, the big oil companies, basically pulled back and stopped exploring for new oil and, you know, trying to keep the price of oil up in the world. They note in the article, by 1960, Iraq Petroleum, this was their company there, had developed only 8 of the 35 oil fields discovered in Iraq. The day of reckoning came in 61 when the nationalist government, which had ousted a pro-Western monarchy in 1958, expropriated the Seven Sisters' undeveloped holdings, 99.5% of the total. In other words, the government said, this oil is ours, you guys. And there basically hasn't been any development since then. I mean, that government was followed by Saddam. And so there's a mind-boggling amount of oil there, it turns out. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. Walmart faces the largest class action lawsuit in U.S. history. A 3-year-old sex discrimination suit against Walmart has been certified as class action. This means the nation's largest retailer is now the defendant in the nation's largest private civil rights case. More from Kalia Ramirez in Berkeley, California.
The suit says the giant retailer is discriminating against women in pay and promotions and creating a demeaning atmosphere for women workers. The class certification makes the 6 named plaintiffs in Duke's versus Walmart stores representatives of the interests of a class of about 1.6 million women who have worked at Walmart or Sam's Club in the United States at any time since December 26, 1998. Brad Seligman of the Berkeley-based Impact Fund is the plaintiff's lead attorney. He says class action status means Walmart cannot afford to ignore this lawsuit.
The jury's judgment is going to affect the rights of 1.6 or more million women, which means Walmart is not going to be dealing with little pinpricks from a judgment here, from an individual, or a judgment there. They're facing the challenge to their whole company.
When the decision was announced, Walmart spokeswoman Mona Williams told Associated Press that the retailer had recently announced a new job classification and pay structure for its hourly workers. Seligman says he doesn't know the details of the change, but that the sex discrimination suit is spurring Walmart.
Changed, haven't they? They're now the Rainbow Coalition works at Walmart. Walmart clearly felt it had to make some changes to blunt what it anticipated was going to be the storm of negative publicity. Which we've seen happen.
Walmart wants to appeal the class certification. Meanwhile, Seligman says the plaintiffs would like a jury trial next year. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kellya.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We know in their March 5th, 2001 meeting, long before 9/11, They actually sat down and divided up the oil fields of Iraq and decided who they would sell the Iraqi oil to. For example, China's oil company, CNPC, might be interested in buying the Adab, the Halfaya, the Luhab. Could it be that that was when the war in Iraq was planned? And that's why the day after 9/11, Dick Cheney was on national TV saying, this has the fingerprints, I'm paraphrasing, this has the fingerprints of Saddam Hussein all over it. Could that be why, when Richard Clark walked into that meeting right after 9/11 in the White House, Bush pulled him aside and said, Saddam Hussein, Iraq, find me something. And he's going, he's got nothing to do with it. It's Al-Qaeda. It's Osama bin Laden. He's in Afghanistan. You know, in Pakistan.
Saddam Hussein, Iraq, find me something.
Newsweek, in the issue which, if it's not on the stands, will be soon hitting the stands. And this from the MSNBC.MSN.com site, Newsweek's international edition. And I frankly don't know if this is going to run in the domestic edition or not, or just the international edition. It just paints a remarkable portrait of the oil fields of Iraq. Some figures, they write, reveal just how untouched Iraq is. Since oil production began at the dawn of the 20th century, only 2,300 wells have been drilled in Iraq, compared with about 1 million in Texas. A large part of the country, the Western Desert area, is still mainly unexplored. Iraq has never implemented advanced technologies like 3D seismic exploration techniques or deep and horizontal drilling to find or tap new wells. Of more than 80 oil fields discovered in Iraq, only about 20 may have more oil than any place on Earth. Well, apparently Cheney knew that, and Kenny Boy Lay knew that in March of 2001. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes after the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Night, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I took a walk in the rain one day on the wrong side of the tracks. I stood on the rail till I saw that train just to see how my heart would react.
And welcome back.
Some people say that you shouldn't tempt fate, and for them I cannot disagree.
Tom Harbin here with you, 25 minutes past the hour.
Nothing from playing it safe. I say fate should not tempt me.
There you go, 25 minutes past the hour. It's 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Our program today sponsored by, as it has been for some time now, Small Dog Electronics, the nation's finest Macintosh dealer. I say that. I'm not sure if they say that, but that's certainly Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS. 1-800-511-MAX if for all things Macintosh. Hardware, software, fix-ups, repair, instant service. Great folks, good work. So, anyhow, welcome back to our program. What this question of the possibility of U.S. foreign policy, a foreign policy that has left that has led to the death of more than 800 of our soldiers, the death of some 20,000 Iraqi civilians, the death of you know, perhaps as many as 10,000 Iraqi soldiers, the loss of arms, legs, feet, eyes of some 4,000, depending on, you know, I mean, nobody knows the real number, but at least 4,000 of our soldiers. We know that there's been close to 18,000 medical evacuations out of Iraq. And not to mention what's going to come down the road. We know from the first Gulf War, about a third of those vets are now sick. We don't know why. Was it the depleted uranium? We certainly used a lot of it this time. And all those soldiers who, you know, in all their rah-rah youth, thought killing was going to be fun, and then they did it, and then they come home. And some of them find it easy to continue killing, and most of them are just wounded emotionally and psychologically. That this decision would have been made by a group of corporate executives? I consider this extremely likely, frankly. See, what happened, I mean, you look at the chronology here, not just of the Cheney thing, but just of the whole history of the corporate takeover of America. And this is really the issue. I mean, this is the bottom line. This is where you get right down to what it's all about. 36 years ago, we struck down the poll tax. We said, okay, you can't say to people, you have to have a certain level of wealth in order to vote. The poll tax was this whole thing where they'd say, okay, you want to vote? Well, you know, it costs us money to administer the vote. You got to pay $50. There are a lot of people who didn't have $50 or $5 or whatever. You know, it varied from place to place. It was a way of keeping out poor people from voting, mostly minorities. 36 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court declared it illegal. But then in 1976, in the Buckley versus Vallejo ruling, the Supreme Court ruled that money was a form of speech, that speech cannot be limited, particularly political speech, and therefore you can't limit money in political campaigns. So now we've got basically two classes of people in America. We've got those who have enough money that their speech gets heard. They get to sit in with Dick Cheney on energy policy meetings. And you've got those of us who have the right to show up at the polls and vote for candidates that have been pre-selected by the money and whose agendas are being driven by the money. What's wrong with this picture? Is this what the founders had in mind? 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. The program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It took a brave pilot to boot the boss of Hawaiian Airlines off his flight, but that's just what Captain Craig Kobayashi did last Thursday. Hawaiian Air is currently bankrupt, and trustee Josh Gottbaum has already frozen the pilot's pension fund while he considers eliminating it completely, converting it to a plan that provides fewer benefits, or closing off the pension to new employees. This has upset many airline workers, and Captain Kobayashi felt Gottbaum's presence on the Honolulu to San Francisco flight would be so distracting that he'd be unable to fly safely. FAA rules give captains the right to ask passengers to get off if they feel they risk the safety of the flight.
Rather than cross the Boston Police Patrolman's picket line on Monday, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry chose to cancel a speech he was going to give at the National Conference of Mayors. This is a political victory for union members who've been picketing Boston Mayor Thomas Menino everywhere he goes. It's now been 2 years since the police have had a contract, and the main sticking point is wage increases. In appreciation of Kerry's solidarity, a police spokesperson announced the union would not picket Kerry during the upcoming Democratic National Convention in July.
On the layoff watch, MCI announced it'll cut 2,000 more employees. This comes on top of more than 14,000 layoffs in the last 12 months. MCI blames the new Do Not Call telemarketing legislation for the cuts, which will affect operations in four states and the Washington, D.C. area. Many of those let go found out in a 60-second conference call Thursday where they got a whole day's notice of their termination from an executive who read a statement and then ended the call.
More than 9,000 timber workers in Indonesia started a hunger strike last week outside their local governor's office. The workers are demanding payment of their April and May salaries from two Hong Kong-based plywood companies. One operations manager and his assistant are being held hostage by the employees, who say they'll not be released until all workers receive their full back wages, which for even the highest paid timber worker averages out to just $116 per month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Recent high school graduates will make less money than those who finished high school more than 20 years ago. The Economic Policy Institute analyzed wages for high school graduates in 1979 and 2003, adjusted for inflation. It found grads in 2003 made between 5 and 17% less than the class of 1979. Back then, nearly two-thirds of jobs open to high school grads also included pension and health benefits. Today, less than a third do.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Everything's gonna be alright, you're the lucky one.
And welcome back. In America here, we really are the lucky ones. You know, it's really extraordinary. The blessings or the gifts or the opportunity, whatever you want to call it, just what we have. What we were born into. Even the poorest among us, what we were born into. When you compare it with at least four out of the 6 billion other humans on Earth who live on less than $3 a day, 3 billion people living on less than $2 a day, 2 billion people living on less than $1 a day, 2 billion people with no access, literally not knowing where the next meal is coming from, over 1 billion people going to bed hungry every night, more than 2 billion people with no access to fresh water, safe water, or sanitation. I mean, it's just even the poorest among us are wealthy by the standards of humanity around the world. It's really remarkable when you think about it. Anyhow, on June 5th, 2004, the Democratic Party of the state of Washington, this is not the Greens or the Progressives, this is the Democratic Party of the state of Washington, did something that Democrats in Maine, New Hampshire, and Oklahoma had already done. They passed a resolution which said, starts out talking about how, 36 years ago we struck down the poll tax, and then Buckley versus Vallejo came along. Whereas, as a result, we have two distinct classes of Democratic participation. One class includes the majority of us who are entitled to turn out on election day to choose from a menu of candidates pre-selected because of their ability to raise or possess huge sums of money. The other class includes those wielding the real power, the ability to finance candidates' campaigns. This elite group determines the options for the rest of us and subsequently controls the political agenda. And therefore, be it resolved that in order to provide all citizens, regardless of wealth, with more equal opportunities to influence elections, to influence public policy, and to run for office, and to further the principle of one person, one vote in a participatory and democratic republic, and to limit corruption and the appearance of corruption in our government, we, the people, declare the unlimited use of money to influence elections to be incompatible with the principle of equal protection established under the 14th Amendment. That's pretty mind-boggling, first of all, because basically what it says is that what we're saying is we, the Democratic Party of the state of Washington, this passed on June 5th, 2004. A similar language has previously passed in Oklahoma, New Hampshire, and Maine. The Democratic Party is saying that the 14th Amendment, which guarantees equal protection under the law to everyone, it was part of the triad of amendments that were passed, the 13th, 14th, and 15th, after the Civil War to free the slaves, that every person shall have equal protection under the law, that because of the way our campaigns are financed, those of us who can't afford to throw hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars into a campaign are not receiving equal treatment under the law. Equal protection under the law. And so it concludes, it says, be it further resolved that we, the people, support all efforts, and then there's a series of bullet points. Number one, to overturn Buckley versus Vallejo or amend the Constitution to reflect that money is not a form of free speech. Number two, to give Congress the power to set limits on contributions and expenditures made to influence the outcome of any federal election, including the power to ban such contributions and expenditures. Now, we wouldn't be the first country to do this. In fact, this is fairly common. In the United Kingdom, if you're running for the House of Commons, you're limited. You can't spend And therefore, you can't raise more than 100,000 pounds. 150, $160,000 more or less. Item 3, to ensure that each state shall have the power to set limits on contributions and expenditures made to influence the outcome of elections in that state for all offices. And number 4, to ensure that each state shall have the power to place limits on initiative and referendum elections. That a reference to the things that have gone on, for example, in California, where, you know, where people go in and they say, okay, we're going to create a referendum that we won't tax ourselves. And at the same time, we're going to create a referendum that we have to have an after-school program. But we're not going to pay. You know, it's like we the people. When just, you know, driven by special interest groups in particular, can be less than fully responsible. And so it's a much more efficient system to go back to what the founders of this country came up with, which is not a referendum system, but rather, I mean, that was passed in 1918 in California as part of the progressive, you know, the politics had become so corrupt as a result of corporate influence in the 1890s, 1880s, 1890s, the Gilded Age, that the politicians of California said, enough, enough, or rather the people of California. And they got this law passed, actually specifically originally, so that they could throw out a corrupt governor, as I recall. So now we have the situation in the United States where money is speech and money defines political power. This is you know, frankly, just to say it, I mean, this is just unhealthy for democracy. And the proof of the ultimate proof of that would be discovering, as Dick Cheney seems to be trying to cover up, I mean, this incredible hiding process, going all the way to the Supreme Court, taking Scalia duck hunting, the whole bit, covering up who attended his energy meeting and what they discussed. Although we now know that that at least one of the subjects on the agenda was what countries and what companies want to buy the oil from the known oil fields in Iraq. This in March of 2001, long before 9/11. Now, this doesn't just extend, this power of money in politics doesn't just extend to things like Dick Cheney and a bunch of oil industry executives sitting around and saying, yeah, let's send the military into Iraq and seize those oil fields. You will recall, by the way, George W. Bush, when he gave his address in which he announced the fact that he was going to attack Iraq, you know, in the major warfare, or whatever they called it, was already starting. And in the midst of that speech, ostensibly to the American public, he pauses for a moment and he says, and now I'd like to speak to the people of Iraq. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this guy's going to say, you know, hey, our soldiers are just like yours. They're just young guys. They, you know, they really don't want to die. Lay down your arms. We've got more force and power than you can imagine. You won't be harmed. We'll have a general amnesty for anybody who comes over to our side. You know, overthrow Saddam before we get there. Everything will be fine. You know, something like that. Instead, what did George W. Bush say? He said,
your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells.
Yeah, your fate will depend upon your actions. Do not destroy oil wells. What a curious thing to say. I'm assuming that you know, and perhaps you don't, that there is this giant whirlpool in the North Atlantic off the coast of, just north of the coast of Scotland, south of Greenland, 15 kilometers in diameter. For 2 or 3 months out of the year, it actually breaks the surface. You can see it from outer space. Ships can see it occasionally. sometimes when it's actually breaking the surface, as they pass over it, it actually tilts them slightly. It may be why on the ancient Mariner's maps they showed giant whirlpools at the edge of the earth. It may be that the sailors of the 12th century got that far and said, whoa, there's a whirlpool here. This must be where the water falls off the edge. And what that whirlpool is warm water from the Pacific Ocean that has come around the southern tip of Africa, come up across all the way up between the north and south and North America on the left side, on the one side, and Africa and the Middle East and Europe on the right side, has come right up the middle of the... Actually, not the middle. Actually, it swings around to the left, becomes what we call the Gulf Stream, right? Flows around the Gulf of Mexico and around Florida. Picks up a lot of heat. It starts out warmer and less salty than the water over the Atlantic, because the Pacific is a bigger ocean. It's almost twice the size. Actually, it might even be three times the size. I don't remember the exact, but it's huge compared to the Atlantic. And it's less salty, and it's actually a little higher than the Atlantic. And so you've got this less salty, warm water that makes its way all the way up off the northern, just to the southern tip of Greenland. And there, because the North Pole is frozen shut, that water can't shoot over the top of the earth back into the Pacific. And instead, what has happened is by that time, it has lost so much heat into the atmosphere. So much of its heat has vanished into the atmosphere. And with it, of course, as the heat comes out, it evaporates water. That this river of water that's now kind of flowing under its own momentum has actually become saltier and colder than the Atlantic Ocean around it by the time it reaches the southern tip of Greenland. And there it settles to the bottom. And in the process of settling to the bottom, it creates this giant whirlpool. Now, this is a body of water which is larger, 100 times larger than all the rivers on Earth combined. It takes 1,000 years for it to make the round trip from somewhere in the central Pacific, south around the coast of Africa, along the surface, all the way up to just south of Greenland, and then it settles all the way down to the floor of the ocean, and then there's this river that flows on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean all the way back down south around the southern tip of Africa and back out into the Pacific, where it again warms up and loses its salinity and comes back up to the surface. It's called the Great Conveyor Belt. And its continual motion is the only thing that is preventing northern North America, particularly northeastern North America, but much of Canada, and northern Europe, everywhere basically north of southern Spain, from being covered with ice, as they were during the last ice age. During the last ice age, which ended 9,000-10,000 years ago, the Great Conveyor Belt wasn't running. And then it started up again, and nobody knows exactly why. Although the best guess is that finally the North Pole froze solid and the Coriolis effect, the spinning of the earth, moving water, started this current going, and it brought warmth up to the north, and that's when the ice age ended. Ended very quickly, actually. It took about 3 years for all that heat to warm up North America and Northern Europe, and the glaciers just vanished. And when it had stopped 10, 20, 30,000 years earlier, it was so sudden, the cooling was so sudden that, woolly mammoths were frozen with food in their stomachs. It wasn't quite like you saw in that movie The Day After Tomorrow, but it took a year, 2 years for the full impact of it to settle in, because there's a lot of heat in the North Atlantic that had to dissipate. But basically it takes somewhere between 1 and 3 years for an ice age to begin and an ice age to end. And here's the concern about global warming, is that if enough of the Greenland glaciers melt, dumping fresh water, very cold fresh water, into the North Atlantic. Or if the polar ice cap should melt, that either one of those two things will cause the Great Conveyor Belt to shut down, and we will be plunged into an ice age in a matter of 1 to 3 years. Now, what would bring this about is the warming of the planet. And here, and you know, now how do I get to this from Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force meeting? Well, here again, this is something that is rarely being discussed except among scientists who are very concerned about this because of corporate money in our political process, because there's so much money to be made dumping carbon into our atmosphere, that is, you know, driving the oil machine. And now we have this report out of Washington, D.C. A new U.S. supercomputer has shown that global temperatures could be rising more than scientists had thought. The computer at the National Center for Atmospheric Research projects the temperatures could rise by 4.7 degrees Fahrenheit if countries continue to emit large amounts of carbon dioxide. The previous estimates were 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Cliff Jacobs, an NSF scientist, said that the new models, the degree of uncertainty is narrowed. We have a higher degree of confidence in these results than in the previous results. He said scientists now hope their models will be sophisticated enough to predict how climate change will affect specific regions, such as in Africa or the American Midwest. And other scientists are concerned that it might lead to the next ice age. We've got to get corporate money out of politics so we can start talking about some of these issues and doing something about it. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Two foreign tinafores are better than one in the Black Sea of Southern Europe. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. During the past 25 years, two arch enemies from the world of gelatinous marine life made their way across the Atlantic Ocean and faced off in the Black Sea. These creatures are called tinafores, and they closely resemble jellyfish. The first tinafore invader took a liking to the Black Sea, and its populations exploded. The second invader has an appetite for tinafore number one, and it ate them up. Keith Bea is a graduate student in marine biology at the University of Delaware, and he's been studying this invasion. He says both invaders are native to the coasts of North and South America. The first one is called Nemeopsis. Bea says it ate the eggs and larvae of fish in the Black Sea and competed with them for food.
It's an extremely voracious predator. It can eat a lot of food. And they have an extremely fast breeding rate. They are simultaneous hermaphrodites, so each individual can self-fertilize. And they can produce thousands of eggs in a day with very little energy input.
Nemeopsis entered the Black Sea in the early 1980s, and afterward, populations of commercially important anchovy fish plummeted. 10 years later, tinafore number two, something named Beroe ovata, came to the rescue.
What it is basically a swimming Ziploc bag, and it feeds almost entirely on Nemeopsis. It's got a very wide mouth, and it basically just unzips its mouth when it hits a Nemeopsis, ingests the Nemeopsis, closes its mouth back up, and digests it.
Bea says Beroe ovata ate most of the Nemeopsis, and that probably helped the anchovies recover. Today, Nemeopsis is a problem in the Caspian Sea, and scientists are considering whether Beroe ovata might be used there to bring it under control. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was having this discussion in a taxi heading downtown, rearranging my position on this friend of mine who had a little bit of a breakdown.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
I said, hey, you know, breakdowns, common breakdowns go, so what are you going to do about it? That's what I asked.
What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? We're going to throw that bum out. We got to change. We got to get those cons out of the House, out of the Senate, and out of the White House. You know, this last weekend, I was at a function with Pat Leahy, our senator from Vermont, and he made the comment that whoever is the next president for the next 4 years is going to probably appoint half the Supreme Court. Now, who do you want that to be? Anyhow, speaking of, talking back to, you know, science, the U.S. government is making it hard. This is from Reuters, published in the New York Times. The U.S. government is making it harder for scientists to speak to their global colleagues. This is the Bush administration. They're restricting who can attend an upcoming major AIDS conference, according to Henry Waxman. He says the Health and Human Services Department has imposed new limits on who may speak at the World Health Organization. Under the new policy, WHO must ask HHS for permission to speak to scientists and must allow HHS to choose who will respond. Tommy Thompson, the ardent abortion foe and, you know, creationist at all, gets to make the decision. This policy, said Henry Waxman, is unprecedented. For the first time, political appointees will routinely be able to keep the top experts in their field from responding to World Health Organization requests for guidance on international health issues. This is a raw attempt to exert political control over scientists and scientific evidence in the area of international health, Waxman wrote. Under the new policy, the administration will be able to refuse to provide any experts whenever it wishes to stall international progress on controversial topics. Originally, 40 presentations were scheduled for the conference in Bangkok, Thailand next month, the big AIDS conference. They were withdrawn after Thompson decided that only 50 U.S. scientists could attend. The scientific community was outraged by this pullback, says Waxman. Welcome to the world of George W. Bush. It's time for a change. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today and engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Ben for getting us on the web. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. Be sure and patronize them. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for writing, composing, and performing our theme music that you're hearing right now. And thanks to you for showing up. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We